Hello, my friends. I'm Shay Marville. Welcome to the second season of Let's Talk, a podcast dedicated to healing and growing through conversations, stories, and deep listening. We are an alchemy of one another. Talking helps us to relieve our burdens, to suffer less, because we are each other's medicine if we choose. So let's talk. Yo, welcome to Let's Talk. Director, writer, well, theater director.
Yes,
actor.
Correct. Yes.
Theater director, actor, writer, playwright, Renaissance man.
Oh, how kind.
Welcome to Let's Talk. I've missed you so much through this pandemic, and you know, I didn't really see you very much right before, but welcome. I can't wait to chat with you and hear about what you're doing and, more importantly, what you are thinking about right now. But before we get to that, any thoughts about the Oscars on Sunday night?
I wish that it never happened, because forever, and I said this to several people, forever, that's going to be part of his quilt. The fact that, yes, he won the Best Actor Oscar, but because of the sensationalism of the slap of the face, people will always go, yes, he did, but this is what happened. I wish it didn't, but I think it's, you know, it's going to be part of his quilt now. I think it's going to be part of his quilt, and I think it's unfortunate, but it is going to be part of his acceptance speech.
Do you think that they should have given him a standing ovation?
Did some people stand up? I don't know if they did or not. Because I think the whole thing was such a shock. It was such a shock thing that happened that people really didn't know what to do with it. And what's really, really cool about that is I remember the image of Denzel Washington talking to him and saying, I'm sure he was saying, you need to calm down. Just calm down. Just, you know, just enjoy the moment, enjoy what is going to happen to you, or enjoy the evening, but just calm down. It's just, I mean, I understand the passion of it. I understand the passion and the spirit of the moment deciding to do that.
Yes.
But I wish that he would have thought about it all the way up to the stage. I wish he would have just turned back.
Turned around. Or I think what Denzel Washington said to him was that, one of the things that was revealed was, in your highest moment, that's when the devil will attack you. And my response to that was that maybe it's in our highest moments that whatever is vulnerable in us, whatever is fragile in us, can actually take us apart and undermine what we've done. And it's a very complicated thing. I have to say, you know, I really appreciate Chris Rock's comedy. I have been unhappy with him in the past because I think he's really kind of gone after Black women, and he's had a whole thing about Black women's hair and stuff in the past. But I think he's a great, you know, comedian, comic writer. I was quite impressed with his literally turning the other cheek.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you.
Very few people could go on after something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, live theater, right? Show must go on.
Right.
Show must go on. I mean, it could have been easily a set piece fell, or a lights fell, or something. I mean, slap in the face, yes, but the show must go on. Do you know what I mean? So good for him for carrying it on.
As a man, may I ask, you know, there's a lot of talk of this concept of, or the idea of toxic masculinity. Do you think, were you offended by that moment as the man, or do you feel that he was defending the honor of his spouse?
I don't know about the toxic masculinity, and I understand about defending his wife. This is, you know, he says, I mean, I remember him saying in acceptance speech, love makes you do crazy things. To be honest with you, I wasn't offended. It didn't, I wasn't I'm not a friend of his. So I didn't go, oh my God, Will, what are you doing? I didn't. I think I was with the rest of the people going, oh my God, this is shocking. Yes. And afterwards, you know, when he said, don't take my wife's name in your mouth. Yes. And I understand that. I understand that, that macho way of thinking, but I just don't think, I just think that the whole thing was wrong. And you know what, as we're talking about this, I mean, I could just imagine the ride to the Oscars and the ride home after the Oscars. Mm. I would be so interesting to find out what was said.
Yes.
You know, did she say, oh, thank you for doing that? Or did she say, what the hell were you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a, I feel, yeah, I mean, I think so many things about it. And I think number one, I just think there are a couple that are overly exposed. Mm. There's too many people in their lives. And I feel that what he did was plainly just absolutely wrong. If they were offended by the joke, they should have gotten up and walked out, or, you know, he could have stayed cool until he received the award and then just said,
and then say something intelligently,
Chris, you know, that wasn't cool. My wife is the blah, blah, blah. And then he would have been so dignified in doing so. But I do think that, you know, not that it's my right to even think anything about it, but it was so shocking. It was a terrible spectacle. It ruined the event for, there were so many amazing things. The first deaf actor, male actor, yes, to receive a supporting actor award. And, you know, the first woman, Afro-Latino, who is a lesbian, to come, to be able to receive an award and be seen, you're right, like, you know, as an actor, you know, yes, like it was a night. I mean, Liza Minnelli was there, you know, yes, and there was this beautiful moment between her and Lady Gaga. And,
yes,
you know, if you're a fan of movies and acting, it was just, they just ruined it for so many people. It was Pulp Fiction, the character, you know, like, oh, John Travolta dancing. And, oh, I mean, it was, I missed some of that, you know?
Yeah, I do. And you know what? The funny thing is, I talked with my students last night about this. They did not, and this is something to be said about what's happening today, because last night, my students were not even concentrating on the slap, but they were concentrating on the things that you just said, the deaf actor. And, you know, and I think that is really, really cool. Like, they didn't even want to mention what happened. They were just more focused on, one of my students was quite upset that Andrew Garfield did not win.
But I love him. Yes. Yeah, and his performance was outstanding.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and, so the kids were concentrating on everything that we just talked about, the positivity of what was happening on the Oscars. You know, some of the younger kids, fans of Billie Eilish, they were like, oh, you know, she won an Oscar, which is really great.
Yes.
So there were a lot of things to celebrate. And I'm really happy that the kids are focusing on that. I really, really am, that they're focusing on that. And the unfortunate, you know, what happened is part of the Oscars now.
Yeah. You've really dedicated your life to teaching theater and training actors who are young. You know, why did you make that switch? I think it was probably, you know, 20 years ago you started West End Theater.
My first job, summer job, was with Parks and Rec program, Mississauga Parks and Rec program. As a young immigrant child who didn't speak a single word of English, I walked to school and I was shocked by how casual the school was, because I'm from Cyprus and we wore uniforms in Cyprus.
Yes.
So for me, seeing these kids in casual clothing, like shorts and t-shirts and everything, I remember going home and going, oh my God, have we lost all our money? Are we poor now? Like, what is going on? I don't understand this culture. I really don't understand this culture. But my grade six teacher understood where I was coming from. Mm. And she cast me in Jack and the Beanstalk. This is grade six. Because I did not speak English, I got to play the cow. And the cow stole the show. The cow stole the show because the cat kept on going moo. And of course, being the ham that I am, I added extra moos here and there. And then people loved it. So my attachment to teaching young has always been about belonging. The studio provides a very safe place for kids that are different. Mm. And I hate using rabbit ears, but it's a safe place for kids that are shy, that are wanting to be actors, that are wanting to pursue the career in acting, or just for self-esteem. And I love that part of my job. I love when kids learn. I love when adults learn. I mean, we have some amazing adults in the classes. Mm-hmm. And I just love when the penny drops and the people realize that it's not just about memorizing lines. It's about, you know, we've mentioned vulnerability earlier on. You know, when you're on stage, live theater in front of a live audience, you are really very vulnerable. You put yourself in a fishbowl, really. People can comment on your acting. People can comment on your personality. People will comment no matter what. And I just want the kids, the young, especially young kids, that there's more to life than math and science. I don't know. I just don't think that in schools, and I speak generally for this, I just don't think that schools, that we are feeding our youngsters souls, because there are so many kids that are not meant to sit behind the desk for 7 hours I really don't think so. The studio provides that for the kids, an outlet. Just a quick note, when the winter session was about to start and I emailed the parents and students and saying, guys, you know, we're in a lockdown again. What would you like to do? Would you like to do classes on Zoom, Google Meets, or would you like to do classes in person? 100% of the students said, we want to do it in person. This is, you know, kids that are 12 to 17 to adults. And everybody was like, we are wanting to socialize. We are wanting to be with peers. We are wanting to discuss things and see people's faces. Mm-hmm. It's a great honor to be able to provide this in the community.
Do you think that the pandemic revealed, I mean, it revealed many things, but do you think it revealed the necessity for theater, art, poetry, this kind of connection? Do you think that's one of the things it showed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. The human contact, the human touch disappeared. Mm-hmm. Everybody was, I mean, even to this day, you know, when I'm walking the dog, people see you coming in and they move to the other side of the street, which is unfortunate. Nobody says hello. You know, it's kind of scary. People miss that. People missed it, and people were doing things. I mean, I had many students that were writing, not writing for getting published, but writing for this is how I feel. And this is my sort of diary. This is how I'm feeling about this. And they were quite smart about it. They were really, really quite smart about it. I had a young man in my fall session who would come up who would show up to class every week, every Monday, and he would have a poem, whether it was about the pandemic or whether it was about a car drive to the studio, whatever it was on the news. And it was his way of letting out how he was feeling. Yes. You know, and I think that the kids are better at that than the adults, because we are much more guarded. The kids are not.
See, I wonder about the crises of mental health amongst young people and the relationship with the absence of literature, of theater, of, you know, of being the ones doing it, like not just absorbing and consuming it, but being the ones creating it. I wonder about that relationship.
Well, I just think that people miss that. People really, really miss working together, collaboration. And I think theater brings out the collaboration and people, you know, the cast, the crew are all in it for one reason and one reason only, is to provide a show, whether it is amateur theater or professional theater. I mean, and you know, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in amateur and professional theater.
There's just good theater. I've never even heard you really make the distinction.
I never have, and I never will, because there's just good theater and bad theater. Mm. You know, and I say this all the time, you could pay $400 and go to a very, very big show, and you sit there and you go, well, you know what, that was okay. Mm-hmm. And then you could pay $5 and to see a show in Timbuktu, and you go, oh my goodness, that was really raw theater. That's what I like. That's what I like about it. I think people miss that. People really, really miss the collaboration. People really miss the that whole thing. And talking to my teenage students at the studio, I cannot believe how rampant the mental illnesses, anxiety, depression is rampant in these young people. They're all worried about getting into schools. They're all worried about their friends. They're all worried about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And the pressure at school. I did a talk about, you know, what is ailing you? What is it so difficult about being in grade 12?
Yes.
And out of the 30 kids, when I took the secret poll, they all put down, I would say out of the 30 kids, 24 of the kids were suffering from depression.
Mm,
isn't that scary?
It's so scary. And it's, I'm not a therapist, and I know you're not a therapist, but we're human beings.
Yeah.
And we've lived a bit. I'm so worried about what's happening with young people. I feel like we're not even responding to what we see. You know, I interviewed someone earlier today, and she is a therapist, and she was telling me that she feels frustrated and hemmed in because she can't actually help people the way she wants to. And I thought to myself, what is actually going on? Like, have we decided that our monetary lives and consuming is more important than caring and compassion? And
of course living? It is. We live in a world where money is it. And I think that people have to be a bit more realistic about this thing. Because, as you know, we went through a really, really tough time. There were a lot of wonderful people in our lives. There were a lot of people that came out of the woodworks to help us. And there were a lot of people that were very close to us that sort of left the situation, and either they couldn't deal with it or they didn't know how to help me and my family. Money is everything. Because, you know, when creditors would call and say, you know, how come you haven't paid your bill? You have to decide at that moment, do I put groceries on the table or in the fridge, or do I pay a bill? Mm-hmm. And money in our society is king. And, you know, people say money isn't everything. And I have a real difficult time with it right now. I really have a real difficult time.
What do you mean? What do you mean you have a real difficult time with it?
With the whole term saying money isn't everything. And yes, you know, your health is very, very important. But when we were going through this with Paul's tumor and everything, we were told that stress is number one killer, because stress is the one that causes all these unhealthy people. whether it's the tumors in our heads or whether it's the cancer, whether it's the stress is a horrible, horrible thing. When you have the money to be able to do what you want to do, mm-hmm. as something as simple as saying, you know what, it's the beginning of the month and I owe $67 to this utility company, and you have absolutely no problem paying. That's something that people go, oh, I take a breath. That's fantastic. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And there are families that are, at the time, there were families that were worse than we were. You try to help as much as you can. But I wish that people are more realistic about saying, yes, money isn't everything, but money is most of things.
Well, and you need money to function in a society that's driven by money.
If the
society was not driven by an economy and, the exchange of goods and services, it wouldn't matter. But
correct.
The reality is that everything has a value. And I think, this is one of the things I admire about you also, is that in a society where money is so important, you decided to create a space for people to learn about the theater, to learn about acting, to write, to play. You rented this huge space in Oakville, and that it's survived all these years. I think it's incredible. And then when I discovered it, I had no idea that you were doing these big plays at the Oakville Theater and the Mississauga Theater, I so admire what you've done over the last 20
years.
It
feeds my soul, though, Shay. It really, really feeds my soul. I mean, there were so many times where people say, oh, well, Oakville, it's rich, this, that, that. There are so many kids that could not afford the classes.
Yes.
And it didn't matter to me. It really didn't matter to me. My answer was always, listen, your child needs to be here.
Yeah.
They need to be here. You need to be here. We can figure out money some other way. But right now, it is important for this child to be at the studio. That's always been very important to me. I hope that I had more business sense, more money sense, because then I wouldn't have to stress about, oh my God, the rent is coming up and I have to pay the rent for this giant studio. But at the end of it, what saves me is, and this is going to sound really, really sappy, but at the end of it, when a young person comes up to me and says, yo, thank you so very much for talking to me like I matter. Thank you for talking to me like I'm a person and not a kid, because I love being here. Then all of a sudden, the rent money goes out the window, because your heart, your soul is so satisfied with that comment. Because when a child says that, it's coming from the right place.
Oh, yes.
There's nothing calculated about it.
No, and it's obvious to your soul that you're doing your soul's work. But I think, honestly, specifically because of this pandemic and the increase, we know that depression and anxiety in young people has, just skyrocketed. It was high before. I do think the argument for the work you're doing with young people is, like, the return on investment is clear as day. I think you have to go after mental health funding, because this is not just about having fun. Not that having fun isn't a good thing and not healthy for you, it is. But I think you're doing a mental health service by creating spaces for all sorts of kids, different backgrounds, different abilities, to come together in a space to be treated like an actor. Right. Yeah. And I know this firsthand, because my kids a few years ago went to your program and they were transformed by it. They were transformed by it. They still are talking about it. It was 5 years ago.
You know what it is? You know, after the first lockdown, we decided to have our musical theater adult classes. And after the 10 weeks, the feedback that we got was people were in tears saying how much they missed this and how much is how much of it meant for their mental health. And you know, it's one of these words that is pushed around so much right now. But when you see results, when you see people break down and say, oh my God, I didn't realize how much I needed this. These are adults. These are adults that are working. They are, you know, 9-to-5 jobs. And that 2.5 hours or 3 hours at the studio is a lifesaver.
Yeah. Well, isn't it because, I mean, obviously, as we've said, you know, there's more to us and there's more to life than money, but there's more to us as beings. There's a need to express yourself.
And there's a need to play. There's a need to play. Because, you know, I say this all the time to my actors. I say the actor's three tools are body, voice, and imagination. And when we get older, the older we get, we start to lose that wonderful tool of imagination. Imagination is the best thing that's ever happened to humanity. Mm. I mean, it is. You know, you sit there and you could take a look at the furniture in your house, to the cars people are driving, to the houses that they're living in, the architects, the designers, the actors, the everything is all about imagination. Yes. I mean, if it wasn't for imagination, would we have a pop iconic books like Harry Potter?
Yeah.
We wouldn't.
No, we wouldn't.
You know, and it doesn't matter what you think of Harry Potter, whether you like the books or the movies, that's not the point. The point is there were so many kids that were hooked on to reading.
Yes.
You know, I remember working at the bookstore. And when I was working at the bookstore, there was a series of books called Goosebumps. Yes. And a lot of the, do you remember?
Yeah,
and a lot of the parents were turning their noses up to the Goosebumps. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Your child looks forward to this Goosebump number 45, 47, 46 for a month and a half, 2 months. Encourage it. Let that child read. Don't say, well, you know, they're scary stories. They're not really, really well written. Who cares? Who cares? When did you become, you know, when did you become a literary expert that, you know, you're questioning? Why would you question that? Let the kids be kids. Let them play. Let them read Goosebumps. It's a sense of belonging.
And explore different ways of seeing the world. Tell me, what do you think, you know, I'm hoping we're at the endemic, right? The end of the pandemic.
I hope so.
What are you like imagining for the theater and for yourself as a teacher and director?
Well, you know, I've been asked this question before. Do you think there's going to be a surge of people buying subscriptions to plays and everything like that? I don't think so. I think people that were going to the theater missed the theater and they will go back to it.
Yes.
I think that people are going to go back to it and support it because the younger kids are getting interested in theater. You know, I mean, the kids are getting interested in theater. I mean, my students, I mean, you know, they know their stuff. They know West Side Story. They know Andrew Garfield. They know Cumberbatch. They know these actors because the actors have become accessible. Do you know what I mean? Either they follow them on Instagram or they have their web. They become accessible for the kids and they love it. So I'm hoping, I'm hoping that this summer, because as you know, we used to take the kids to Stratford Festival to see a show. And most of the time they've experienced Stratford Festival or Shaw or the Mervishes downtown through West End Studio Theater. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time. I would say, how many of you are going to the Stratford for the first time? And out of 45 kids, you know, there was only three. They were all hands up saying, I've never been. And as a teacher, I was like, wow, this is really, really cool that we are providing this for these kids to actually see live theater, you know, mm-hmm. a world a worldwide famous theater, Stratford Festival, Shaw Festival, you know, pretty high caliber theater. I think that we'll go back to it. I think eventually it will get better. I think that the mature part of the subscriptions, the older part of the subscriptions, for any of the subscriptions like the Shaw, Stratford, Mervish's, even, you know, at the Oakville Center, I think they're still a bit hesitant.
Right.
But I think because of the young crowds getting involved and wanting to see live theater, I think it's going to come back eventually. And I think it is going to be stronger. I think it is going to be stronger because people miss it. People that have gone to the live theater and have seen live shows, people miss it.
Yeah.
So they will be back.
And they miss that sensation that you feel from being enveloped in a live show and that experience. Do you still write? Are you a writer as well as
you know what? Not really. I've been sort of doing a lot of work with the younger kids with writing in my mm-hmm. younger young adults and 12 to 14 year olds. So what I've given them scenes where there's a beginning and an end,
yes.
and they have to write the middle of it. And it's really, really cool because they have to stay true to what the scene is about. Right. So do you know what I mean? So it really helps them develop the characters. You know, right. What do you think about this character? How do you think this character will go through this circumstance? So the kids are doing all that really, really nicely. And I did this also with the Waldorf School. I teach Waldorf at high school, Waldorf. And that was one of the things that I did with the kids. And I said, I have these monologues and I have these scenes. I would like for you to put the monologues into the scene. Where do you think it's going to be fitting?
Yes, yes.
And it gave them an opportunity to write. It gave them the opportunity to develop character and develop story. So that makes me feel really, really great. And that satisfies the writer in me, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I just don't like picking up a paper and pen and going, oh, now I'm going to write. It has to move me. Something yes. has to move me.
Has the pandemic given you, has it inspired you to write differently or to think about theater differently or, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It has. I mean, you know, I mentioned this to you before. I'm now directing the Laramie Project. It's an amazing play. So when we first did Laramie, it was streamed on Broadway on demand. The pandemic has given us the opportunity for people to see this show that probably would not have seen it.
Definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So it has done that, and it has inspired me because I really want to get back to theater. The whole idea of West End Studio Theater came about because I wanted to do some raw theater. I wanted to do raw theater. And I'm not putting down any of the farces or comedies. I'm not. I really am not. I think theater is theater. And yeah. I love it. But I really wanted to, and this is maybe because of the pandemic, I don't know. But I really want to do things that are going to be important to me. I think it's going to make a difference with the plays that I choose to do and what I want to say about life, about society. Mm. I think that's going to help me choose the plays that I want to direct and to produce. Oh, as you know, as a parent, as you as a parent and people that are listening as parents, I mean, the Laramie Project is, it's an incredible piece of...
Tell us about it.
Well, the Laramie Project is about the young man, Matthew Shepard, who was beaten to a pulp and tied to a fence and left to die. He was out there on his own for 18 hours, fractured skull, beaten to a pulp. The theater company, Tectonic Theater Company from New York, goes to Laramie and interviews the people of the town. So the people that knew Matthew Shepard, whether the bartender knew him or whether the storekeeper, the cab driver, And these are actual words, Shay. So they're actual words that the actors went and interviewed people. And there are characters that were on Matthew Shepard team. And there are other people that were completely going, well, you know what? He was gay. And so he should not flaunt it. And because he flaunted on the wrong people and he got beaten to death.
Oh my God.
But you know, and this is the good thing about the project is that it has points of views.
Yes.
And you can pick and choose. You can pick and choose. I mean, you know, for us, the humanity could say, oh my God, what a horrible thing that happened. It is a horrible thing that happened. But there are characters in the play who are completely honest about the way they feel about it. They're justified the fact that maybe Matthew Shepard did deserve it.
Wow.
You know, maybe God hates gays. And this is the reason why God created hell. That's a direct line from the play. But that's the good thing about it. And it is such a emotionally charged show.
Yes.
There are 8 actors, 4 male and 4 female, and they each play many, many parts by just switching a shirt, putting on a hat, just with their voices. I mean, and this is raw theater, right? This is what I talked about. It's a very important play. I think that everybody, I'm not pushing it, but it is important that people see this show. It may not be the West End Studio Theater show, but if you have a chance to see this show, you should see it. Because it's, you know, when you look at the script, you just go, oh my God, I can't believe people hate so much.
And was it 10 years ago when that he
1998.
It was 1998.
Yeah.
Wow. Good Lord.
Yeah.
I thought it was more recent for some reason, because that maybe shows you how quickly I'm aging. It's interesting because in Florida now, there's that law about, like, don't say the word gay. And that was in 1998, those things were being said. And those, some of those things are being said now. Like that,
as humans, I know, but as humans, though, you sit there and you go, how far did we really come?
Mm.
How far did we really come?
1998. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's so strange to me because, in some ways, I mean, I know we have made so many advancements, but at the same time, sometimes it feels like we're going backwards in terms of capacity to listen and compassion for people who have different points of view. Like, it seems like there's so much hostility to someone just having a different point of view.
People listen to react and not to understand.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
They listen to react, not to understand.
Not to understand. So there are words that sneak into people's vocabulary or the daily dialogue about, well, you know, I can put up with that, or I can, you know, I can see their point, but, and I just go, okay, no, I mean, I get it. I'm sure I've said that. I'm sure I've said that. I'm sure I've heard people say that. The word that I don't like is tolerate. I can tolerate that person. Well, what does that mean? Tolerate. What does that mean? Is that if I confront you and then I'm going to tolerate you? If I haven't seen Shay for a long time and I see Shay at Starbucks and I go, hey, how are you? That very selfish, very shallow. And then I walk away and I go, well, you know, that was good enough. That was like 2 minutes with Shay.
I could tolerate that.
Like, you know what I mean? And I think that's what we need to do. And this is the other thing that I like about my job, is that when these kids are talking, I listen. You have to listen, because every single class with these kids, the first 5 or 10 minutes is about their days. Yes. And I had so many kids say to me, I wish that our parents listened like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Or they get me. Like my, yes. I wish that my parents would get me like you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think the thing is, we undervalue actually talking and being present for other people. So because it's undervalued and spent enough time doing it, mm-hmm. and then what ends up happening is that you never have to say to someone, I don't value you. They just feel as though they're not seen, or they're not loved, or they're not, you know, valued. So they might disappear. You know, they feel smaller.
I don't know how parents listen or what happens or whatever it is. But sometimes you just go, what is being discussed at home? What is being said at home? Mm. Do we have that lack of understanding our kids? Do we understand our kids? Yes. Or do we see the kids the way we want to see them and not for who they are?
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
And this is what's happening. This is what's happening. You know, going back to Laramie again, I have so many parents who, or students also, saying about if they have any type of alternative lifestyle, let's put it that way. Yes, if yes. my child is, you know, if my child is gay, or yeah. if my child is bisexual, or if my child identifies this, they're not hearing it.
Mm.
They're not hearing it. They're hearing it, but they're not understanding it.
Right. Or accepting
it. They're hearing it and saying, well, you know, most of the cases, this might be a phase you may be going through.
Yes. Yeah. So, and what if it is a phase? It doesn't mean that you shouldn't pay attention and give your full love and caring.
Absolutely. You
know, every phase, every moment requires the same thing.
It's a growing process. It's a growing process, right? It's a growing yes. process. It's yeah. like the phases of theater. You know, you have a read through, you cast a play, you have a read through, you block the play, everybody memorizes their lines and then develops the characters, and boom, it's opening night. It's a phase, right? You know, Picasso went through phases. All these artists went through phases.
Yeah.
It's because it's a yes. stepping stone. It's the way we learn.
Yeah.
You know, we don't That's have right. an instruction book. We don't have an instruction book. You know, and I say this all the time. My dad was, my parents were fantastic. And I remember when we moved here, the whole religion thing played a big part, because we were raised Muslim and we were in a Christian country.
Yes.
And I remember my father looking at the manual for the fridge. And I remember him saying to us, see this book? This book tells us how to run this fridge the best possible way. So both the Quran and the Bible and the Torah, whatever you believe in, is a guideline for you to live your life and make the most of people around you. And that's always stuck with me. And I remember I was getting ready to direct Fiddler on the Roof around 9/11 time. And I was at a party, and somebody said to me, are you still going to direct it? And I said, why wouldn't I direct it? And the gentleman said to me, well, your people are flying planes into buildings. And I said, I beg your pardon? My people? Like, what are you talking about? And I was shocked, because this was a person that was educated. This was a person that teaches theater. This is a person that, to me, is a civilized person.
Right.
But I said, I just laughed at it. And afterwards, I realized what a stupid comment that was. Mm-hmm. Are you still going to direct it? Why? Because I'm Muslim and Fiddler on the Roof is Jewish? What has that got to do with anything? What has that got to do with anything?
Unbelievable. That is, you know? So interesting.
Yeah.
That was even, you know, a thought. And mm-hmm. that he was lumping you together with the maniacs who flew into the building because of religion. Like, it's so bizarre.
Sometimes if you generalize people, you're racist.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you generalize people, well, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. Hmm. And I go, what part of it? What part of it don't you understand that it's the same thing?
Hmm.
I mean, is it okay to say these people that drove airplanes into the buildings, that all the people of that country or that of faith are the same? No, you cannot say that.
Cannot, no.
You cannot say that. But why is it okay? Why is it okay when that is being said? People most of the time agree with you and they go, yeah. But when you say something about, for example, a different religion or different race of people,
yeah,
and one of these people did something horrible, you cannot say, oh, all the pink people are murderers.
Yeah, no, you cannot. But people do.
But people do.
Yeah, that we're still trying to work our way through that. When you were a kid, was it hard being a new immigrant to Canada?
Oh my God, it was awful. It was so bad that I wanted to go back to Cyprus. I remember coming home from school, as I mentioned before, and going, oh my goodness, people are wearing patches to school, because that was the fashion back then.
Yes.
People had patches on their elbows and on their knees, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember coming home, we landed. Now you have to remember, living in Cyprus, open fields, orange orchards everywhere, open spaces, family. Minority
in Cyprus, or was your family there for a long time?
I'm a Turkish Cypriot. So I was born there. And we came to Canada and I was like, I don't speak the language. And this is how bad it was. This is the truth. I refused to speak English because I thought if I refuse to speak English, my family is going back to Cyprus. I hated it.
Extraordinary.
I missed all of that. I missed one of the most influential people in my life was my grandma. Because it was pure love.
Yes.
I mean, you know this, Shay. You know this.
I know.
It's pure love. Yeah. And you leave that and you come to a country where everybody's a stranger.
Yes.
I mean, I had my parents, my brothers, and that was it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as immigrants, we faced a lot of challenges. We didn't speak the language. Mm-hmm. You know, my father lost the job because one of his Turkish friends decided that he should not work for the Caterpillar, which was a huge company.
Yeah.
And my father was an engineer, a big, big unit engineer. And he applied for a job, which he got. But we didn't have a permanent residency, that all our important mail was going to this person's address. And the person literally took the acceptance letter, ripped it, and threw it in the garbage. And his excuse was, you're not ready because you don't know the language that well.
Oh, my.
When we bought the house, we had people anonymously calling and saying, I have a used fridge. I have a used stove. I have a used bed. Would you like to buy it? These were Turkish people that were doing this because my parents became successful very short time.
Yes,
like we moved, we got here in 71 and we bought a house in Clarkson in 72.
Wow.
So there was a lot of jealousy. There was a lot of animosity. We had a difficult time in school. Mm. I had a difficult time in school. I didn't know where I belong. Again, a teacher, and this is the reason why I love teaching. And I'm still friends with this woman. Her name is Jenny LaRiche. And she was my high school drama teacher. And we're still friends because she was involved with the Oakville drama series.
Yes.
When a teacher loves what they're doing and touches a student's soul, it's the most important thing you could do as a teacher. Understanding where that kid's coming from.
Yes, yes.
You know, because I remember her telling me, maybe you should join the drama class because English is not a major thing. Like, you don't have to speak English that well to do theater. And I went, yeah, she's right. So I'm going to join the drama club. And I did.
And just her being able to see that in you.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. As a teacher, you must go through. You must see beyond the books and the homework.
Yeah.
You must understand. You must understand. You know, if little Johnny is coming to school and the homework is not done, please ask and why. Please ask and why. Understand. Yeah. You know, maybe little Johnny doesn't understand the assignment.
Yes.
Maybe little Johnny is dealing with something bigger at home.
Yeah. And maybe little Johnny doesn't have anyone around him to help him understand the assignment. Right.
Exactly.
Teachers are, I don't know if enough teachers know how life changing their work, their presence is. And it's not actually about the academics. It's about seeing the light in that child and saying, I see more for you than is what is in front of you right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I could talk to you all day. I could talk to you all day.
Yes.
You're going to have to come back on the show.
I will.
The show is growing and expanding. I'm
so happy for you. Happy for you. Really
thank
am.
Thank you. I there's some other things I'd like to talk to you about. And I think this piece, I think this piece around emotional well-being and using theater to help people talk to and play with language, explore stories. I think this is more needed now. I think there's stuff for us to do together, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all for it. I think we do need that emotional therapy.
Yes, yes.
You know, we need it. Yes. To surround yourself with things that are going to make you happy. Whether it is teaching, acting, collecting plants, you know, whatever is going to make you happy. I think it's important. You know, it's really, really important.
Have you started your garden yet?
The tulips and the daffodils are all coming up. I cannot wait. And then, you know, it was really, really nice there for a couple of days. And then, of course, we had our freezing temperatures for the last 2 days. And I'm like, oh, no. I want spring now. But, you know, I'll be patient with Mother Nature.
Yes.
I think she knows what she's doing.
I think so, too. Listen, I'm sending you a big hug. Big, big hug.
I love you.
Big, big kiss.
Mwah, big, mwah. Big hug. Big, big kiss.
I love you, too.
Great chatting with you. Great
so
chatting
great.
With you.
I'm so grateful for your time, my friend. I'm Shay Marville, and you've been listening to Let's Talk, a podcast dedicated to healing and growing. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And listen, I need your help to grow the reach of this show. Could you, would you, please subscribe, rate, and review us on any platform that you're listening to. I'd love to hear your feedback. Ciao for now.